Good afternoon. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. Today is Thursday, March 19th, and the time is about 10 after 1 p.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room. Right now with us, we have myself, Senator Von Imhoff, we have Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, and Senator Giesels with us. I think other senators will be joining us shortly. They're just grabbing lunch. First on today's agenda is Senate Bill 240, an act relating to unemployment benefits during a period of state or national emergency resulting from a novel coronavirus disease, COVID-19 outbreak, and providing for an effective date. This is our first hearing on the bill. I'd like to invite Senator Click Bishop and his staff, Cody Gusendorf, to the table to present the bill. And thank you, Senator Wilikowski, for joining us. So Senator Bishop will just stay where he's at and present the bill.
Anytime. Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members and those at public watching at home, we are in extraordinary times, and extraordinary times requires leadership. And I'm happy to say that the Senate as a whole is leading on this issue and this particular issue, and that's Senate Bill 240. It's a Labor and Commerce Committee bill. It relates to unemployment benefits during a period of state or national emergency resulting from the COVID-19 outbreak, and provides for an effective date. The bill, we have been working this concept for over 2 weeks. Senate leadership has been in contact with the last Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, our congressional delegation, and what you see here before you today is a result of that work. The sectional, there's actually five sections in the bill, Madam Chair, and there's two main sections. The other three sections are conforming language, regulatory authority by the commissioner, and an effective date immediately in a sunset provision in the bill. I would like to say that to my committee members and those people listening at home, there are over, I know there as of Tuesday of this week, there were 12 states that have already passed similar language to expedite week waiting requirements. Our state is one state that has a week waiting requirement to receive benefits, and this legislation does that. And also sets had a 90-day threshold in it. This bill does for these emergency benefits, and that's the genesis of the bill. Our goal is to get replacement income into the economy as fast as we can, because at 5 p.m. last night there were more people in the food service retail industry. We need to keep this cash flow going. That's what the UI Trust Fund was established for. And with that, Madam Chair, my staff is ready to proceed at your request.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Whenever you're ready, Cody, say your name for the record and go through the sectional, please. And thank you, Senator Wilson, for joining us.
For the record, Cody Gruzendorf, staff to Senator Bishop and the Labor and Commerce Committee. I'll walk through a sectional of the bill. Section 1 adds a section to uncodified law that says an insured worker may not be disqualified for conduct related to COVID-19, including providing care, including medical care, to one or more persons, preventing or limiting the spread of COVID-19, or preventing or limiting economic loss or harm. Subsection B of Section 1 is the 90-day threshold that the senator talked about. Subsection C is waiving the 1 week waiting period. Subsection D states that this benefit does not violate the Unemployment Security Act. Subsection E directs the Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development to administer this section. Subsection F cites the definition of insured worker. Section 2 of the bill increases the dependent allowance for the duration of a state or national emergency related to COVID-19 to $75 per week per dependent. It also eliminates the limit for that. Current limit is 3 dependents. This would eliminate that. Section 3 of the bill repeals this act April 1st, 2021. Section 4 provides transition language, authorizing the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to implement this act, and Section 5 is an immediate effective date.
Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor or regarding the sectional? We do have two invited testimony online. So stay where you are, Cody, as well, just in case. We have first Patsy Westcott, Division of Employment and Training Services. Can you hear us, Patsy? Are you with us?
Yes, Chair Von Imhoff, for the record, my name is Patsy Westcott. I am the Director of the Division of Employment and Training Services with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The Unemployment Insurance Program is one of the components within the Division of Employment and Training Services, and so I am here and available to answer any questions that the committee may have regarding unemployment insurance and this bill as it relates to paying unemployment insurance.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you, Patsy, for being online here today. You and I have been talking frequently in the last couple of weeks. Could you put on the record, I think you might need to staff up with some more employees to meet the demand. Could you just let the committee know how that, if I'm accurate on that, and how that might, that process might work?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Bishop. We have been looking at our potential staffing needs as a in anticipation of the increased workload that we know or that's already started to come our way. We have already diverted staff from other units in the unemployment insurance program to assist our frontline staff in taking claims, and so they are currently doing so. We've diverted approximately 20 staff so far. We're also doing overtime. We've expanded our phone hours so that we can respond to unemployment workers' needs more quickly. But even with those measures, we do anticipate the need to fill some of our vacant positions. We have a number of vacant positions already in the unemployment insurance component that, because we were at kind of at historic lows, for unemployment insurance workload, we haven't needed to fill those, but we do anticipate that in the coming weeks we will need to get those positions filled. So I have about 25 PCNs that are already budgeted for. They've just been vacant, so we'll be looking to recruit for those.
So you have, okay, so Ms. Westcott, I actually am hoping that you can sort of describe the process before we continue with the questions. And the process that I'm thinking of is, can you start with how the applications are processed? Are they online or via the phone? And then kind of describe the qualification process. Do folks, if they haven't necessarily lost their job but are just merely asked to stay home, do you have a box for them to check of something like that? And then lastly, and I'll repeat these as we go, but how are benefits paid out? Are they electronic or check? So just, again, how the process works from soup to nuts.
Sure, thank you. Those are great questions, Chair Von Imhoff, and I'm happy to answer those. So your first question was the method in which people file, and the answer is we have both. We have an online application, and that's probably through the My Alaska portal, and that's probably the fastest way for someone to file for a new claim. But then we also have call centers. We have three call centers around the state. We're a virtual call center, and so as calls come in, they just go to the next available worker to take a claim for those individuals that don't have access to the internet and need to actually talk to someone.
Okay.
So once the claim is, let's see, what was your second question?
So then just describe the qualification process. Is it like a one-pager, or does it take, you know, 3 or 4 days? And do you normally have like a verification process, and is there some type of quick verification, like a streamlined one for this period of time?
Chair Von Amhoff, applications are processed real time. So as soon as we hit the accept button, the individual has an established claim in our system. Then we look at eligibility. Is the person actually eligible to receive the benefit? And there's a couple different parts of eligibility. One, they have to be unemployed through no fault of their own. And then the second part of the eligibility is that they have to be able, available, and actively seeking work. There are some waivers that temporarily waive that able, available, and actively seeking work part of the requirement. Right now, we are trying to interpret them as liberally as possible so that we can pay these workers that have been impacted by business closures and just COVID-19 in general. The bill before the committee today helps to relax those provisions even more so that we can really respond to the needs of unemployed workers during this unprecedented situation. So once we've established their eligibility, benefits are or have been in the past paid out every 2 weeks. So a person files their new claim and then they have to wait 2 weeks, and at the end of 2 weeks they file what we call a claim certification form for those last 2 weeks, and then we send the benefit payment out. Benefit payments can be through debit cards, through direct deposit, or through check if someone doesn't have a bank account or doesn't want the debit card. We do it still issue checks. We today are taking the move to make some programming changes to our system to allow for single week filing so that we can expedite payments out to claimants even quicker. Instead of a biweekly filing process, we're going to go to a single week filing process.
This is great news.
Yep. Did I cover all your questions?
You did, and I appreciate that. And I just have so thank you for that comprehensive description and the changes that you're making and the adjustments. And Senator Wilkowski, just 1 second. The last question that I have is, are you prepared to accept federal money when we expect it hopefully soon? Are you prepared to accept it and be able to process the claims using federal money?
Chair Von Amhoff, absolutely. The unemployment insurance program is a federally funded program. Both, our administrative funding comes from a grant through USCOL, and we are prepared to accept and utilize any money that the administration sees fit to send us.
Thank you very much. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the solvency of the UI fund right now?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe that our UI economist, Lennon Weller, is on the line, and I would defer questions about our UI trust fund to Lennon.
Mr. Weller, did you hear Senator Wilkowski's question? It was about the solvency of the fund.
good afternoon. I did, Chair Von Inhofe. For the record, again, my name is Lennon Weller, and I am an economist for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and serve as the UI actuary. Regarding solvency, fortunately, we're actually in a pretty good position right now. We have just south of $500 million, roughly at $493 million, which is actually currently above our current statutory targets for full solvency.
So, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And just on that $493 million, how long would you project that would allow us to run? Or what sort of, we've heard in the press recently they're talking about possible 20% unemployment rates. What sort of flexibility does that $493 million afford us in terms of, if we pass this bill, is that going to put the trust fund in any sort of risk?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's a very good question, and clearly we're working going through a very uncertain time. There's a lot of moving targets. I can tell you that I've done certainly some stress testing, you know, out at least for a 12-month period, and we could roughly absorb about an 8-fold increase over what we're current benefit payments on a monthly basis. Certainly, duration and magnitude are going to have a significant impact on our ability to absorb payments going forward. But so it's impossible to say, you know, whether or not we could weather any sort of storm. I mean, certainly nothing is indestructible, but we are certainly well equipped to handle a very significant increase in benefit costs, at least certainly for the foreseeable future, 3 to 6 months. We could certainly handle some costs, you know, I would say in the realm of 10 times roughly what we're used to experiencing and what we have been experiencing over the past couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Weller. I think thank you for stress testing the fund, to Senator Wilkowski's point. I think if we're looking at the three phases of the federal aid that's coming out, there's literally phases 1, 2, and 3, and they're for different purposes. One of the purposes is for unemployment insurance. There's also other purposes going to SBA, small business, and those are loans for businesses to also cover payroll. So it's kind of coming in the belt and suspenders. So the goal is for the fund not to be stress test to the 8 to 10 times. First of all, you discussed duration. If the federal funds can come within the next 4 to 6 weeks, the duration is shortened. The federal funds are used versus the state funds. Number two, if during the one or two phases the SBA money comes in, and I spoke with the SBA people, they are getting geared up to be able to provide these loans as well. To businesses to be able to pay all sorts of expenses, including payroll. So that's, again, like I discussed, the belt and suspenders, and that should hopefully be coming in between 3 and 4 weeks as well. So, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is for Mr. Waller. Do you have any sort of comparison on how Alaska's benefits compare to what's the maximum allowable in Alaska right now, and how does that compare to other states in the country?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, so currently we have a maximum weekly benefit amount of $370, and that in dollar amounts tends to put us somewhere in the middle of the pack nationwide. However, as a replacement rate, we are, in fact, in last place when it comes to replacement of lost wages.
I could. Do you have that chart? I'd be interested in seeing both of those charts, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we do certainly have those charts, and I'd be happy to provide those to the committee.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Just slightly different topic, but I don't know if Mr. Waller's the person or not, but can you just explain how UI is funded? Is it funded out of the general fund at all, or does it come from employers or employees or federal funds or what, typically?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the unemployment insurance program is funded solely through a payroll tax derived from employers and employees, the shared cost of the program, but it's collected on an ongoing basis from those covered and paying in what do we consider taxable wages. That amounts to about 93% of all wage and salary employment in the state.
Senator Bishop.
And just, Lennon, isn't it also true that the department can receive administrative grants from the federal Department of Labor for federal government to the UI Trust Fund?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, that's correct. We certainly can receive funds. I believe Director Westcott mentioned the fact that administration of the program is funded through some federal grants. There's also the ability to gain federal dollars to pay out emergency unemployment compensation and, in some cases, extended benefits, which I believe is in the works at the moment.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The sponsor says that people that are quarantined are eligible for these benefits. How would you administer that, and how would that, what type of documentation would you have? And would people that self-quarantine themselves that are covered under the UI program be included?
Is that for Mr. Weller or
Ms.
perhaps Pat Westcott?
So, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, when an individual files for unemployment insurance, they are required to certify that the information that they are giving us is true and correct, and they are advised that there are penalties for fraudulent activity. So, as is the case with anybody that contacts us to file for unemployment insurance and attests that, you know, they were laid off from their job or, you know, they were unjustly fired or, you know, we take statements and we, if we have reason to believe that the information that they have given us is not accurate or questionable, we investigate those. But otherwise, we, you know, we process their claim, and individuals impacted by COVID-19 would be no different. I forgot the second part of your question. I apologize.
My question is, the someone submits a claim and said they were quarantined either by their employer or where in that in the legislation does it state that? And the second question, are people that self-quarantine themselves are eligible for these benefits?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that's what this legislation attempts to do, is broaden the eligibility so that these benefits are available to anyone that has been impacted by COVID-19. So those individuals where their employer says, you have to go home, you need to quarantine yourself for 14 days, we want to be able to pay those individuals unemployment insurance benefits while they're home on that quarantine, or the parent who isn't able to work right now because the schools are closed. And currently, under current unemployment insurance law, we can't help those parents out during this time. And so that's exactly what this legislation seeks to do, is for anyone that's impacted by COVID-19 and is not able to work at this time, it's through no fault of their own. And so we want to be able to pay those individuals benefits and to help them get through this period.
So your answer to my question that people that self-quarantine themselves are eligible if they feel that they may infect others if they go around them?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, exactly. You know, part of the goal here with this legislation is to protect communities. And so if an individual feels that it's in the best interest to protect the community that they self-quarantine so as not to take that risk of community spread, we want to be able to help those individuals as well.
Thank you.
So one of the questions I have for you, Ms. Westcott, is if a person is being is quarantined at home for whatever reason or just been asked to be furloughed for a period of time by his or her employer, but is being paid by his or her employer through whatever means, the employer found means, either through an SBA loan or through their own means, does that person qualify then for UI benefits if they're already being paid just to stay home?
Chair Von Amhoff, no, they would not qualify for unemployment insurance benefits if they are on paid leave.
Okay. You have a question, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment and a question. And Ms. Westcott, I was really appreciative in your comments earlier. Some of the committee members were away on other state business, but you used the words the federal government has given us the guidelines to interpret these as liberally as possible to execute our mission here at the Department of Labor. I appreciate that. This, but the second thing is, I want to go back to, I know you got 25 PCNs open, but I just, you know me, I've always been one to plan ahead. Here in Alaska, we always got a contingency plan for the contingency plan. But with that being said, I'm wondering if we don't might need some additional PCN authority if you were to see an increase that you couldn't handle. That's all.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, is that a question or a statement?
That's a question. Do you agree with the question? I mean the statement.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I certainly would not say no to additional PCNs in the event that they are needed as we respond to this outbreak.
So, Senator Bishop. So to that point, Ms. Westcott, so how many of the people that you're going to transfer now are already cross-trained and can hit the decks running? And if you're and if they have no zero training, how long does it take you to take an employee from beginning to end? Because you know we were running those classes in the department years ago, and I can't tell you how long it took to educate them to get them up to the speed for the call center.
So through the chair, Senator Bishop. The staff that we have diverted from their normal duties to take claims at this time, one of the great things about the unemployment insurance program is that really to get to any other unit in the program to advance up, you really have to have that frontline claims-taking experience. And so we're in a great position because the staff that we're able to divert to help us with this increase in claims load, have at one point been a claim taker and kind of just need a few minutes refresher to remember how the process works. So for that piece, we're good. Yes, typically because the program is there's a lot to it, and so typically our training period is 3 months. In cases like this, and certainly this was the case back when we had the recession in 2008 and 2009, and we did a lot of hiring at that time as well, we would be looking, I think, to really bring people on and really focus them on single function, and that is initial claim intake and not training them on any of the other pieces that a claims taker is normally responsible for. But just focusing them on here's how you take a claim application and get it in our system. So, and that I think we can accomplish in a very short period of time, like a week.
Thank you.
Just want to make you hold on. Is there anybody else? Okay, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Two questions. The first is, what's the maximum time that a person is going to be eligible for unemployment benefits if this passes?
So through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, when an individual establishes what we call a benefit year, within that year, the maximum weeks of eligibility are 26 weeks. Mr. Weller briefly mentioned extended benefits. Because of the increase in workload that we anticipate, there is the possibility that the state of Alaska will trigger on to what we call an extended benefit period. And extended benefits allow an individual additional weeks worth of eligibility during their benefit year, and the maximum number of weeks eligible under the extended benefit program is 13. So if the state does trigger on to extended benefits, then the total weeks available would be 39.
Senator Wilkowski.
And then what if a person, because the way, what I'm reading in the literature, it seems it's kind of a rolling closure, I guess. We'll have a period of time where everything's closed, and then they're going to open it up again, and then people are going to start getting the virus again, and this is going to go on for a year, 14 months, 18 months maybe, possibly. If someone's receiving benefits and then they go back to work and then they're laid off again, I'm talking restaurant workers, bar workers, coffee shop workers, do they have to reestablish, do they have to work a certain period of time to become eligible, or are they, would they, if they got laid off in, say, a month, would they be entitled to go right back on workers, on the unemployment insurance?
So through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that 26 weeks would be available at any time during their benefit year. So they could file a claim, you know, if they're impacted right now because their restaurant closed down, they could file a claim right now, claim, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks of benefits, go back to work. For whatever reason, there's an outbreak, the business shuts down again, they're out of work again, they call us, reopen that same claim, and start claiming benefits again. So that 26 weeks is available throughout that benefit year, depending on the individual need.
Thank you. What I would comment is that this bill, of course, does have an expiration date next April, so we have about a year's grace period. And at the same time, you know, we're uncharted territory. We're going to have to be working this out as we go. And I think what Ms. Westcott said early on was that they have the latitude by the federal government to liberally define and interpret the rules. So I think that because we don't know when the wave is going to hit, we don't know to what degree Alaskans are going to be affected and how long it's going to last, again, that term duration, that we've given it a full year. And if it lasts beyond that, hopefully we will all be here next January and we can tweak this if we need to, because we will have a lot more knowledge at that point. And we'll kind of know a little bit where we are financially a little bit better at that point, with markets dropping, et cetera. You've heard this. So we're going to get through the next couple months, and I think we're giving the tools for Ms. Westcott and others to implement this. And I'm reading right now the federal government just passed a $1 trillion proposals introduced. So, Senator Bishop, did you have your hand up?
No, I mean, the main takeaway in this bill right now is we're waiving the week waiting period and get them. Senator Wilikowski, we all know at this table how that's this restaurant closures has affected a group of people that we all need cash flow. Hell, I need cash flow. You know what I mean? And we're getting them cash flowed right now. That's the main takeaway for me.
Do we have any further questions for our two invited testimony? Okay. Thank you both, Ms. Westcott and Mr. Weller. We are going to go through the process of public testimony. Okay, so I'm going to open up public testimony at this time. Do we have anybody online? We certainly don't have anybody in the gallery. I'm going to close public testimony. Do we have any further questions for our bill sponsor or for Mr. Grusendorf? Okay, we're going to set Senate Bill 240 aside at this time. We plan to take up the companion legislation when it is in our possession, hopefully tomorrow morning. Let me know this afternoon, please, if you have any concerns. Okay? So our next bill is HB 197, House Bill. It is an act extending the Alaska Seismic Hazards Safety Commission and providing for an effective date. I'd like to invite Representative Chris Tuck and Chris Curtis, like to come together, legislative auditor, to the table to present the bill and the audit findings. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing House Bill 197. For the record, I am Chris Tuck, Representative Chris Tuck from South Central Anchorage, District 23, also known as the Diamond Business District. What House Bill 197 seeks to do is to extend the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. As we know, Alaska is one of the most seismically active regions on Earth, with a history of large and damaging earthquakes. Last year alone, we had about 50,289 earthquakes, and so far this year, we've had 8,788 earthquakes. In looking at the 2019 summary of Alaska seismic activity from the Alaska Earthquake Center, it should be in your packet, the thousands of earthquakes that strike Alaska every year threaten the safety of the people of Alaska and the viability of our infrastructure, which includes roads, bridges, runways, buildings, our homes. And the state of Alaska has worked really hard in preparation for that. Part of that was first introducing the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission back in 2001. And some of the duties that the commission has is to make recommendations to state, local, and national officials on how to reduce Alaska's vulnerability to earthquakes. And it also works on ways to plan for and improve our earthquake recovery and reconstruction efforts. The fiscal note on this is a small fiscal note. It's $10,000 per year. It's primarily for travel. This commission is made up mostly of volunteers that actually come from the Division of Geological and Geographical Surveys, Geological Surveys. So basically, that's what House Bill 197 does. I do have Chris Curtis, our legislative auditor. She's here to go through the results of the audit, as well as we have Sterling Strait, should be on the telephone call. He's the chair of the commission, and then also Steve Masterman, who is also available to answer any question. He's the director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Ms. Curtis, whenever you're ready, please state your name for the record, and let's go through the document.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. We did conduct a sunset review of the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. I believe you have it in your packets. It is dated March of 2019. So the audit found that there continues to be a public policy need for this commission's existence, and we are recommending extending the commission 8 years, and that is the maximum allowable in statute. If you turn to page 9 of the report, you'll see a schedule of annual expenditures for this commission, and you can see that this is a relatively low cost of leveraging volunteer expertise. Annual expenditures range from just $3,500 to just over $13,000 a year. We did identify a need for two administrative improvements. They begin on page 16. First, we recommend the commission chair ensure procedures are implemented to publish meeting notices timely and accurately. We did find 5 of 25 meetings we tested were not public noticed or not public noticed timely. And then second, on page 17, we recommend the commission chair ensure the strategic plan is updated to reflect current goals and priorities based on the experience. Jumping to page 29, which is the response to the audits, we've got DNR commissioner agrees that there does continue to be a need for this commission. And then she goes on to explain corrective action they plan to take to address the recommendations. And then on page 31, the chair of the commission agrees with the findings and recommendations and then describes that procedures have been implemented to ensure the public meetings are noticed and that the strategic plan has already been updated.
Any questions by committee members? No one likes earthquakes, but the last one is still pretty fresh in our mind. So thank you both for doing this. It's a simple bill. It's just extending the effective date. All right, easy peasy. Let me just go read and see what I've got here. It says, we're gonna open a public testimony. Okay, let's just go ahead and do that. Before I do that, just real quickly, senators, we do have, I think what they mentioned earlier, Mr. Sterling Strait, Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission, as well as Steve Masterman, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Do you have any questions at all? Okay, so we're going to go ahead and open a public testimony. So public testimony for HB 197 is open. Is there anybody online? There's nobody in the gallery. All right, public testimony is closed. All right, with no further questions, thank you, gentlemen, for being online. We do appreciate it. We will set HB 197 aside at this time, but plan to take it up soon. please let me know if you have any questions or concerns as soon as possible. So this does conclude today's meeting. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We will let members and the public know as soon as we have a final agenda. We are adjourned.